Olympic athletes train hard. We all know that. For many, it's their job to push harder and longer and heavier than us mortals do. When we say, no way, or why would I ever do that, they endure. But this might not just be a function of training their bodies. The net effects of all those watts and miles and grunts aren't only measured in washboard abs, records held, and medals won. The discomfort of the most unbearable workouts is, in a way, the reward, giving meaning and value to the endeavor of athletic excellence. On this episode of The Podium, aching for gold, the incredible workouts leading to Tokyo, and why what you pay in discomfort, you receive in meaning and community.
The language is really subtle. Game recognizes game. What they're speaking about is, I know what it takes, and I see it in you.
I was so far in the red zone that I crashed and broke my collarbone. It doesn't get a lot harder than that.
I think any rower that you talk to that's actually gotten to that really, really dark place knows that you just kind of go blank.
From NBC Sports, this is The Podium, a podcast about the Tokyo Olympic Games. As we near Tokyo, we'll bring you the story shaping the greatest athletic competition in all the world, held in extraordinary times. I'm your host, Lauren Shahadi, and over the 12 episodes leading up to the opening ceremony, we'll dive weekly into a facet of these games to discover the people and the places that will define them. Gold can be scratched by most pebbles. It's not a hard metal. In Tokyo, the cliche podium move of biting a gold medal is actually liable to leave tooth marks. Grinning with their photo op a thousand-mile stairs, first-place finishers are sinking their teeth into something that is incredibly hard, pushing your body and mind past the point of comfort and then past the point of composure, sometimes past even the point of alarm, into the unknown. Where U.S. Rugby Sevens player Carla Niles knows, going the extra yard takes on a whole new meaning.
Here's Carla Niles, the speedy run, and it's touchdown for Niles.
Oh, my God. One is Yaka yards. We go to dark places. Oh, my God. You talking about dark places. I remember one time. So it's like you do about 45 minutes to an hour of combat conditioning where you don't know. Listen, when I say, I remember I was almost blacked out and I'm just crying and I'm crying and I'm about to hit one of my teammates because we had to do about 100-meter bear crawl and then we had to come back and then start hitting each other, boom, driving each other back. Before that, we're doing so many up-downs, tackling bags, wrestling, all this, driving these sleds 50 meters and back for 5 minutes straight. It was, oh my God, like it was so hard that you don't even know how you're just doing it. You're just doing it. And the dark places, you want to quit. You want to stop. All the little voices in your head just creeping, talking to you. And that's where we go to dark places and we allow and we teach ourselves how to overcome that. And when it's time for that, how to push past that. And that's one of the hardest workouts.
U.S. track cyclist Chloe Dygert has a similar story.
Any watt bike workout, it's hard. You always get on it and you're going to do something that's full gas. The hardest workout that I had ever done was a kind of a sprint type workout. It was 20 seconds on, 40 seconds off. And 20 seconds on is full gas with a 40-second recovery. I remember doing that, and after the first set, I had to get off, and I was projectile vomiting. Very hard stuff, but it's what makes you better.
On that journey into the unknown, when all your body's dashboard lights are on, you aren't actually alone. You'll notice all of our guests today refer to this as a place. The workouts get you there. It's like a VIP zone of amazing athletes, and the price of admission is pain. Sports and high-performance psychologist Mike Gervais explains.
Nobody is going to find themselves on the podium. And that's a big word I'm using, nobody. Without facing down some incredible stress, without facing down incredible adversity. And that discomfort that comes with being in unsettled situations is, for many people, more than they can imagine. Those that are able to persevere and be resilient to find themselves pursuing their very best on a regular basis is not for the faint of heart. And it's one of the reasons why Olympians are so magical in their pursuit, is because it truly is pure. When we see an Olympian on the podium, which is as special as it gets, we'd be remiss to say, oh, like, look at that special person. Look at that strong man or woman or person that's able to do the extraordinary, and think that it's something to do with their genetics or that just that they work hard. Actually, what we miss in that celebration often is the way that they fundamentally orientated their life. They have fundamentally committed to day in and day out pushing up against the boundaries of their potential. And that is so discomforting. That is so agitating. That is so nauseatingly difficult to do. There's a language that is unique to those who are dedicated to a life of high performance, to a life of potential pushing. And that language is, you know, it gets thrown around in this kind of colloquial phrase, like game recognizes game. And the language is really subtle. It's because what they're speaking about is, I know what it takes, and I see it in you. It takes years of dedicated, committed, deep focused training.
But Mike, why is it so hard to just say, okay, I'm going to go in that gym or on that track and push myself?
You know, the mandate of our brain is not orientated towards this type of life and lifestyle. Our brain is really designed to find and scan the world for all the things that are dangerous so that we can survive, so we can manage threat. So in some respects, this secret language, if you will, of high performers is the recognition of what it takes to work against some very primal, very base mechanisms in our DNA, and use that system to promote excellence. And so, yes, there is a secret handshake, there's a recognized language, and, you know, it is game recognizes game.
And now, an improbable but not impossible Olympic moment with Ahmed Farid from NBC Sports.
Atlanta, 1996. The Olympic Games.
Of four, the United States is in gold medal position. They have widened their lead over Russia.
The U.S. women's gymnastics team, known as the Magnificent Seven, is leading the women's competition. Up until now, Russian athletes have dominated, winning 9 of the last 10 Olympic titles, competing either for the Soviet Union or the unified team.
The Americans have never in their lives performed this well.
This is the very first time in Olympic gymnastics history that the U.S. is in a position to win the women's team competition. The gold is within their grasp, and all they need to do to take home the gold is get a decent score in the final event, the vault. Now, Team USA is known for its strong vault routine, so maintaining the lead shouldn't be a problem. And after the first four American gymnasts complete their vaults with good scores, they can practically taste the gold medals.
The Americans are vaulting for the gold medal. And
Dominique Moceanu, the second to last American in the competition, who only needs to score a 9.43 to secure gold for the U.S., runs down the runway, launches off the vault, and slips and falls on her landing. No big deal, though. Like everyone else, she has a second chance to get a better score. So she goes again and slips on the landing again.
The same thing.
Well, this is amazing. If you told me this was going to happen, I would have said, no way, it's not. It couldn't happen.
But hey, that's okay. The lead that Team USA has is enough that even if one of their gymnasts gets a low score, they can still win gold. And there's still one more gymnast to go. Carrie Strug.
So Carrie Strug, it is up to her. If she can score,
if she can give a solid performance, Team USA will take home gold for the very first time. So, to play it safe, Carrie decides to do a vault that she has performed perfectly dozens, if not hundreds, of times before. The gold is all but a technicality at this point.
The same vault we just saw.
Carrie eyes the vault from the end of the runway, goes over each move in her head, and takes the first step. 4 fast seconds later, she launches herself into the air and...
Oh! 3 falls in a row for the Americans.
The crowd gasps.
This is scary.
She is lifting. Carrie is hurt.
Not only does Carrie fail to stick the landing, she also tears multiple ankle ligaments in the process. Carrie and the American team see the gold medal possibly slipping away.
The Americans could lose the team gold to Russia. A 9-4.
The eyes of the crowd and the world fall heavily on Carrie's shoulders. How can she possibly stick the landing with an injured ankle? 1 last shot.
Scores big. She will not only win the team gold.
Not knowing how severe her injury is, Carrie limps back to the end of the runway with a numb left leg.
She will go when she is ready.
With adrenaline coursing through her veins, Carrie rockets down the runway, launches off the vault, into the air, and... nails the landing, lifting up her left foot the moment it touches the mat.
Carrie Strug is hurt. She is hurt badly.
Carrie salutes the judges and immediately collapses in agony.
She has either twisted her ankle or something worse.
In a state of disbelief, she starts crawling off the mat as her teammates look on. Whatever damage her ankle had taken on the first jump was clearly amplified on the second.
She hurt herself on the first ball.
And that is when the final score is announced.
We've got to find out if she's a 9-7-1-2. She has done it. Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team.
A 9.712. She's done it. They've done it. For the first time in history, the U.S. women's gymnastic team has won overall Olympic gold.
The Russians are in tears.
Overcoming the odds with snapped medial and lateral ligaments in her ankle, Carrie Strug proved that from a heavyweight wrestler to a 4'7", 87-pound gymnast, Olympians are some of the toughest athletes on earth.
The few people who are willing to push hard enough to explore the limits of their body and their mental resilience in training often find camaraderie in one another, knowing they're in the same boat.
There's those superhuman efforts, and there is often very close to that, those epic fails as well. So I think rowers are really riding that line between superhuman and total failure.
And I think that's definitely something that bonds crewmates together, because you have that trust in the other person or the other people that, okay, if I'm going to go to that place, you're going to that place too, and we're going to go there together.
I'm Gabby Smith. I row in the Canadian women's double sculls.
My name's Gavin Mackay. My involvement is with developing future Olympic athletes.
Gabby, you're already in Tokyo getting ready for racing. Gavin, you coach Gabby. For someone who doesn't know rowing, why is it so hard?
It's a full body sport, and it really uses all of your capacity in terms of your mental, your physical, your oxygen intake, the capacity for your heart to pound blood through your body. Like, it really requires everything.
Well, because for someone who's unfamiliar, it can look like an upper body movement, right?
Yeah, I'd say it can sometimes look like that. And for sure, a lot of rowers do have very big arms, myself included. But the majority of the power in your stroke actually comes from your legs and your back. And in reality, even though it looks like your arms are doing a lot, they're really more just a guide.
So how does a rower train? I see a lot of those rowing machines in gyms. Are those where the pain happens?
Yeah, we do spend quite a bit of time on rowing machines, known as ergs. And depending on where you are in the world, you probably spend more time on them than not.
it's quite a contrast, right? Your work is either in a sweaty room with a bunch of machines or gliding on an idyllic canal.
Yeah, I'd say you nailed that one on the head. Either it's like mountainous, glorious, sunshiny outside, or it's a dungeon. But I think actually more than anything in those moments, your environment is sort of within your own head, honestly. You don't really notice what's going on around you, what the room looks like, what it smells like, what you're hearing. When you're like really going through it in a workout, all of that fades away and it's sort of just you and whatever is 3 feet in front of you.
Yeah, so take us through a tough training session.
It's terrible. There have been a bunch. I was telling some of my teammates about this just beforehand. We were all recounting our worst workouts ever. I think the feeling probably depends on what the workout is, whether it's a lactic burn or whether it's a super long row where you're bonking hard or in the middle of a 2K erg or something. But probably across the board, I would say your legs are on fire, your chest is on fire, your lungs are on fire. You can't really see straight. You know, you start getting tunnel vision, probably seeing some spots. Just kind of trying to stay vertical and trying to keep going as much as you can.
Have you ever failed to stay vertical?
I mean, the nice thing about rowing is that you're sitting down. So for the most part, you're not like going to fall over too much. But you will see a lot of puke flying. You'll probably see a lot of spit flying. Yeah, it gets pretty ugly sometimes.
Gavin, as a coach, I would imagine you're sort of a dungeon master. What's it like to assign that kind of uncomfortable task?
It depends where the athlete is in their process. So early days, we try and structure workouts where they can successfully get through it. But sometimes we miss the mark and it gets a little tough. I remember Gabby's early days, there was a training that we had, which was 20 minutes. I think it was at a fixed stroke rate at pretty maximal pressure, a small break, and then a 1 minute all out sprint. And then we'd repeat it. And I wasn't the one to assign that particular work, but I definitely witnessed Gabby doing that work. And I thought, wow, that is really painful.
That was dark. That was real dark.
Yeah.
And have you noticed a trend in how people overcome that pain?
Well, I mean, I think it helps to have like this, just this big, hairy, audacious goal that you're going after this way. And if it's a process and to go deeper into that process, I think you can keep moving forward and try and get more and more out of yourself.
I'd say for me, I kind of keep it pretty simple and just count to two every you know, one stroke, one, next stroke, two, and then start back from one. It just sort of gets a little bit meditative and keeps me more sort of in the moment. And if I start thinking, oh God, my legs hurt, or oh God, I'm about to projectile vomit everywhere, oh God, I'm about to black out, then the pain gets worse. But if I can sort of keep myself very streamlined in what I'm thinking, by which I mean counting to two over and over and over again, then it gets a lot, well, not a lot, but it does get easier.
I think about some of the trainings that Gabby was doing. And as I think about that idea of a really big goal, I remember one Saturday morning, we were down at the Olympic Basin and doing an erg session. And it was with that idea in mind to try and break through a number of barriers. And we kind of come up with this idea together that we're going to do something crazy. Like, Gabby, I think it was, you'll probably remember, it was like,
I'm 22. So curious which one you're going to pick.
I think it was like 22 or 24 by 2 kilometers.
Oh, yeah.
Something
it was
insane.
23. Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I just remember Gabby going through that process. And, you know, at one point she's like, the bottoms of my feet really hurt from pushing so much. I'm like, well, that's really something. Like, you know, I think of the body shutting down, but she's even realized that the bottom of her feet aren't working.
Does that intense effort elevate goals or your relationship with your crewmates?
Yeah, 100%. And I think you also see that when you're doing like big group ergs and, you know, maybe there's 20 athletes in the room, everybody's erging and it's hard and you can hear the struggle and you can hear the pain, but you also hear people cheering for each other. And even though you're all suffering and it sucks, you know, you have that trust that the person beside you is doing everything they can to stick with you. And I think it really builds that team kinship, as you said, and trust that, you know, okay, well, I'm going to go there and everybody else is going there too. And we're going to come out the other side.
And hopefully on the other side is some hardware, right? You have the accomplishment of qualifying for Tokyo. How do you view those wins in light of the discomfort it takes to get there?
The journey and the path that it takes to get to that point takes a lot of sacrifice and there's a lot of adversity along the way. And so I think to me, the more satisfying part is, oh, look at all these challenges that I overcame to get here. And obviously, yeah, the physical pain is part of that day in, day out and on race day for sure. But I think speaking a bit more broadly, I think that's sort of where the achievement and the accomplishment comes from in my eyes.
What about when you just can't continue? We're talking about these superhuman efforts, but you do find your limit somewhere, right?
If you are pushing hard enough, sometimes you're going to push to a point where you can't push anymore. And I think probably one of the biggest lessons for me was when I first started rowing, I think I was kind of scared to push that far and then start failing because it felt like, okay, well, I was supposed to go out and do this and I couldn't do it the whole time. And oh my God, what a failure I am. But I think somewhere along the lines, someone said to me, you know, it's not just that it's okay to fail, it's imperative that you fail. And if you're not failing pretty regularly, you're not going hard enough. And so I think since then, like a light bulb kind of went off in my head of, okay, if you want to see me fail, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to swing for the fences on this one.
I think rowers are really riding that line between superhuman and total failure.
And finding that limit, that total fail, is part and parcel of the process, as seven-time Paralympic gold medalist Tatiana McFadden knows well.
Fun exercise that I used to do as a freshman was at the college, we used to have our feet hanging up in the ceiling, and then I would do stair climbs up and down. And that was primarily to work on our shoulder strength. And that was one of the hardest things I've tried was doing that. I actually fell on my face the very first time that I did that, but I got better over time.
I guess that's better than what happened to Team USA cyclist Alex Howes.
The hardest training session is generally going to be like a race simulation. So for the 2012 Olympics, we analyzed the course and we found a hill kind of around town that was pretty similar. And we just went out there and did 6.5 hours and raced up the climb every time. And then in between, we followed a small scooter. We call it motor pacing. You can use the scooter to get into the draft there and keep the pace high. And if you're committed to staying with the scooter and staying on the back of it, it can really, really stretch you out thin and you can really find your limits there. It doesn't get a lot harder than that. Actually, on the second one that we did that, I was so far in the red zone that I crashed and broke my collarbone and didn't get to go to the 2012 Olympics, which was a huge bummer. It was a bad day, but, you know, it's fine.
It's fine? That wouldn't be fine to me. But when your purpose is to measurably go beyond what you've been able to do in the past, a special mindset kicks in.
We have yet to see Kate Nye from the USA opening with this 106.
Wow. Fantastic. Wow. Wow. That is electrifying.
My name is Catherine Nye. I am competing for Team USA in the 76-kilo category in weightlifting. Most people from the outside would think it's all just strength, whatever. But when you have hundreds of pounds on your back and you're squatting for several reps and multiple sets of those, it is just grueling sometimes. And even if you're strong enough, you have to mentally convince yourself that you can do that and you're capable of it. Because if your mind is not in the mindset that I am going to make this rep or I'm going to make this set and I can do this, like, you probably won't, because it's pretty easy to miss in weightlifting. You just have to dump the bar off your back. So you have to commit to it and just have to be mentally strong enough to, you know, push those limits for yourself, or else you're not going to get stronger. So that's kind of the tough part of weightlifting that a lot of people don't think about, because yeah, it's easy to stand up and down and do a squat, but when it gets to those heavier weights and you're pushing your best, like, that's hard stuff, you know?
What's your current best, Catherine?
I'm a 76 kilo lifter, which is around 170 pounds, and I can snatch 113 kilos, which is somewhere right below 250 pounds. And I can clean and jerk about 137 kilos, which is around 300 pounds.
So you're lifting almost double your own weight above your head.
Yeah, I mean, it's heavy.
No kidding, it's heavy. What makes you want to go back into that tough place, the gym or the training that allows you to perform at such a high level?
Most of it is showing up, right? Like, I know that's cliche, but, like, you know, half of it is just showing up. And I believe that to be true, just because it's always better than you think it's going to go, if that makes sense. Like, almost always I've noticed, like, I get in the gym and I'm feeling like crap. And by the time I'm warmed up and getting going, I'm like, I feel better about it because I know I'm working towards my goal, even if it is a little hard, even if I'm tired and I just want to sit and watch Netflix, it's okay, because it is my passion and I love doing it and I love working towards those goals.
So these Olympic medals, ostensibly objects with no use made of soft metals, are elevated by the countless hours of adversity and discomfort required to win one.
But I mostly wanted to prove that, you know, I could be the best, you know, despite, you know, having things stacked against me. So yeah, I don't even, like, yes, I love my gold medals. I have them displayed in my gym or whatever, but I hardly ever think about them. I think about that feeling of lifting PRs that day and knowing all that hard work paid off.
But perhaps by pushing yourself past what you think is possible, you'll discover newfound appreciation of whatever is on the other side. Your own gold medal, if you will. And although you likely won't be running as fast or jumping as high, you'll have one thing in common with the Olympians in Tokyo. Pushing towards a goal, in this case, a shiny disc of soft metal, that is actually incredibly hard. And that's what makes it worth every moment. And that's it for this week's episode of The Podium. Follow now wherever you're currently listening to get automatic downloads. For more Olympic content ahead of Tokyo, check out NBCOlympics.com. And starting July 23rd, tune into the networks of NBC.